and mostly sunny. Not warm, but comfortable. And to the west, little puffs of cloud animated a pleasant autumn sky. Twice he spotted deserted fishing cabins along the shoreline. But after an hour, the forests thickened, and the country went shaggy and unbroken. He used his new plastic compass to hold a bearing due north. Very simple, really. Lost was his forte, a lifelong pursuit. It was close to noon when he moved into a series of channels that twisted capriciously through the wilderness. He swung to the northeast, where the woods looked deepest and most inviting, the channels splitting off and multiplying, and then multiplying again. At one juncture, he found himself thinking aloud, "Nothing sensible," a little jingle in his head. "East is east and lost is lost." He told himself to shut up. "Don't lose it," he thought. "Not that. Not yet." But soon he was singing against the throb of the engine. "You're much too good to be true." Later, other songs came to mind, which he voiced to the afternoon. And for a considerable expanse of time, he had the sensation of being adrift on a sea of glass. Reflections everywhere, backward and forward. At times he found himself speaking to Kathy as if she were in an adjoining room, some secret hidey-hole just behind the mirrors. He told her everything he could tell about what had happened at Tuan Yin, the pastel sunlight, the machine-gun wind that seemed to pick him up and blow him from spot to spot. "Oh, Kath," he said quietly, "sweet, lost Kathleen." The only explicable thing, he decided, was how thoroughly inexplicable it all was. Secrets in general, depravity in particular. He did not consider himself an evil man. For as long as he could remember, he had aspired to a condition of virtue, for himself, for the world. Yet at some point, he'd caught a terrible infection that was beyond purging or antidote. He didn't know the name for it. Simple befuddlement, maybe. Moral disunity. A lost soul. Even now, as he looked out across the glassy lake, Wade felt an estrangement from the actuality of the world, its basic nowness. And in the end, all he could conjure up was an image of illusion itself. Pure reflection. A head full of mirrors. He laughed and thought out loud, "Won't you trust in me, please?" Then paused to appraise the woods and water. Very natural. Whitecaps and plant life. Here was a region that bore resemblance to the contours of his own little repository of a soul, the tangle, the overall disarray, qualities icy and wild. Yes, and all the angles at play. This angle, that angle. Was he a monster? Well, he wondered. But it was inconclusive. A while later he yelled, "Hey, Kath!" Not a monster, he thought. Certainly not. He was sorcerer. "Kath!" he yelled. Some vacant time passed, an hour or more. And when he refocused, Wade saw that the sun had dropped off well to the west. 4:30, he guessed. There were clouds now, bloated and purply black, the sky pressing down hard. He smelled winter. Not snow, but the principle of snow, the physics. For a few moments he felt something approaching terror. If the object were survival, which it was not, he would now turn tail and put the throttle on flat-out flee and make a run for whatever was left of his life. Instead, he chuckled. "Dear me," he said, and turned in toward a low island a quarter mile to the east. It was snowing by the time he'd made camp for the night. Nothing elaborate, a pair of pines, a blanket and a fire. He ate a sandwich, not tasting much, then pulled out the note Claude had left him and read it through by firelight. A grand old gentleman, allegiant in an epoch of shifting loyalties. "Whether you're nuts or not, I don't know," Claude had scrawled. "But I can honestly say that I don't blame you for nothing. Understand me? not for nothing. The choices funnel down, and you go where the funnel goes. No matter what, you were in for a lynching. People make assumptions, and pretty soon the assumptions turn into fact, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Anyhow, I've got this theory. I figure what happened was real simple. Your wife got herself lost. The end. Period. Nothing else. That's all anybody knows, and the rest is bullshit. Am I right? Wade smiled. He looked up at the sky, almost nodding. But there was no point in it. Points were hard to come by. He fortified himself with vodka and finished reading. A couple of practical things. You got a radio on board. It's set to the right frequency. Just switch the fucker on and talk. I stuck the chart book under the rear seat. Canada's that hunk of dry land up at the top of most pages. Recommended highly. I'm not saying you should change your mind, even if you know what your mind is. But at least there's plenty of space up there to evaporate. It's worth some thought. Luck to you. Love. Wade read the letter through again, then lay back and watched the snow slanting across the yellow firelight. The old man was mostly right. Kathy was gone. Everything else was guesswork. Probably an accident. Or lost out here. Something simple. For sure, almost for sure. Except it didn't matter much. He was responsible for the misery in their lives, the betrayals and deceit, the manipulations of truth that had substituted for simple love. He was sorcerer. He was guilty of that, and always would be. Just after midnight, Wade woke to a heavy rain. He was drenched and cold. For the rest of the night, he huddled under the pair of leaky pines, sometimes dozing, sometimes staring out at the dark. Here, Wade realized he had come up against a few firm truths. The wet, the cold. His quixotic little war with the universe seemed pitiful indeed. "Well, Kath," he said. Later he said, "Well?" His tone was intimate, open to conversation, but nothing returned to him. At first light he continued north. The rain had become fog, which was presently replaced by scattered flurries and a hard westerly wind. By 9 o'clock, the flurries were dense snow. The wind was light, the temperature not far above freezing. Visibility, he reminded himself, was not a problem. All morning he cruised at random through a maze of wide channels, zigzagging. No objective except to lose himself and stay lost. The snow helped. Once, in the early afternoon, he found himself surrounded by several sparkling white islands. The view was stark and beautiful. A Christmas card, he thought. Happy holidays. Despite everything, his mood was curiously festive, his morale high, and it occurred to him that happiness itself was subject to the laws of relativity. He took out his bottle and sang, "I'll be home for Christmas," then other carols. And as he continued north, the appropriate images began to take shape before him. Wreaths and eggnog and stuffed stockings and big bowls of oyster stew. "Hey, Kath," he said. He waited, then yelled, "Kath!" Late in the day, he switched on the radio. He listened for a moment and then switched it off again. The world was elsewhere, all static. And then a zone of white time went by, a mind blizzard, long drifting sweeps of this and that. He was conscious of the cold and little else. Sometimes he was sorcerer, sometimes he wasn't. His grip on the physical world had loosened. Grip, too, was relative. At one point he heard himself weeping, then later he was back at Tuan Yen, clawing at the sunlight. Toward dark he turned into a small, sheltered bay and dropped anchor 20 yards offshore. He measured out 2 inches of vodka, drank it down, then tried the radio again. This time Claude's voice came back at him. "Read you week," the old man said. "Sounds like Alaska. Over." Wade could think of nothing to say. "You there?"
"Where?"
Wade said.
Yeah, very comic.
Claude's voice came through frail and sickly.
Just so you know, Lux and company are probably monitoring this, so if you don't want nobody to... See what I mean?
Crystal clear.
You're okay?
Snug as a bug. Lost as can be.
You found the chart book?
I did, Wade said, though he hadn't looked for it.
I'm grateful. Thanks.
The old man snorted. There was some static before his voice returned.
Ripped up every board. Right now they're prying off the shingles. Search and destroy. Vinny's down on his hands and knees with the sniffer dogs. Ain't found zero.
They won't, Wade said.
For sure.
I appreciate that, too. Listen, I didn't hurt her.
Now there's a fact.
I didn't. Claude laughed.
Better late than never. I'll keep it between you and me.
The airwaves seemed heavy with sentiment.
You read my little note? Winnipeg's not such a bad place. Calgary, I don't know.
Thanks again.
A possibility, don't you think?
Wade was silent.
Yeah, well, Claude said. Try not to fuck up my boat.
Wade turned off the radio and sat still for a while. The afternoon had passed into dark. He took nourishment from his bottle and then found a screwdriver and spent 10 minutes disconnecting the radio's twin speakers. Is there sound, he wondered, without reception? Do you hear the shot that gets you? How big, in fact, was the Big Bang? Do our pathetic earthly squeals fall upon deaf ears? Is silence golden or common stone? He turned off the boat's running lights. In the twilight, he ate half a sandwich, wrapped himself in a blanket, and curled up on the front seat with the vodka and his anthology of bad dreams. The night passed slow and cold with intermittent snow, and on occasion Wade was compelled to remind himself that misery was in part the point. Except the point sometimes eluded him. Current circumstances, he decided, were not explicable to the likes of a psychiatrist or clergyman. The point? To join her in whatever ways were possible. To feel what she felt. To harm himself? Certainly not. And yet harm was also relative, happiness and harm. Clear as a bell, was it not? Had he been happy? Had he harmed her? Well, no, but yes. And then soon other thoughts intruded. If time and space were in fact entwined along the loop of relativity, how then could one ever reach a point of no return? Were not all such points contrivance, therefore meaningless? So again, what was the point? Not to return. Ipso facto, he reasoned. Yet he could not stop returning. All night long he revisited the village of Tuan Yen, always with a fresh eye, witness to the tumblings and spinnings of those who had reached their fictitious point of no return. Relatively speaking, he decided, these frazzled citizens were never quite dead. Otherwise, they would surely stop dying. Same for his father. Proof of the loop. The fucker kept hanging himself. Over and over, the bastard would offer shitty counsel at the dinner table. Stop stuffing it in. And then he'd slip out to the garage and climb aboard a garbage can and leap out into endless returning. His neck snapped by no point in particular, all points unknown. Late in the night, Wade turned on the radio and broadcast these thoughts to the wee hour ethers. Emboldened with vodka, he poo-pooed the notion of human choice. A scam, he declared. Much overrated. At what point, he asked, does one decide on rafters and a rope? Answer, no points to be had. There is merely what happened and what is now happening and what will one day happen. Do we choose sleep? Hell no and bullshit. We fall. We give ourselves over to possibility, to whim and fancy, to the bed, the pillow, the tiny white tablet. And these choose for us. Gravity has a hand. Bear in mind, trapdoors. We fall in love, yes? Tumble, in fact. Is it choice? Enough said. Once or twice, his voice failed. He lay under an inch of snow, mic in hand, remarking to the airwaves on how hard and well he had fallen. Few fell farther. Senator Sorcerer. High ambition, eternal love. Did I choose this life of illusion? Don't be mad. My bed was made. I just lied in it. He slept, a brief, numb sleep, waking to the danger of frostbite. It was a little past 3 in the morning when he switched on the radio.
Sinners and spinners, welcome back. You're tuned to WFIB, Station of the Stars, and we're sucked in here at Storm Central on this treacherous Sunday morning. Traffic's light, roads are slick.
He sneezed and wiped his nose.
As promised, and we deliver. Here's our up-to-date list of closings. No services at Disciples of the Lost Shepherd. No mass anywhere. No velocity. Certainly no way out. Other cancellations to follow.
As dawn broke, he was conducting a one-man talk show. The interview was going well.
My love, my life, the purpose of all deceit. She is what I had. Have I yet discussed her way of chasing me with a squirt gun? She did, indeed, with a squirt gun. Squirt, squirt, she'd cry. During a party once, this was years ago, we drove home and made yum-yum against the refrigerator and took a delicious little bubble bath and then drove back to the party in time for the speeches. Senatorial behavior this was not. It was her way. Did I tumble in love? I did. Did I remain in love? Oh, yes. Remember, a squirt gun. The girl of my dreams, her skin, her soul. So, in this time of desolation, let us strive to be honest. Would you not tell a fib or two? He went off the air at 6:30. His fingers were wooden. It took 20 minutes to remove the radio from its mounting. He dropped it overboard. He fired up the twin Johnsons and swung north into Lake of the Woods. Chapter 29. The Nature of the Angle. It is in the nature of the angle that starlight bends upon the surface of the lake. The angle makes the dream. An owl hoots. A deer comes to drink in the topmost branches of a pine. From the bottom of the lake, eyes wide open, Kathy Wade watches the fish fly up to swim in the land of sky-blue waters, where they are pinned like moths to the morning moon. On a map of Minnesota, the northwest angle juts like a thumb into the smooth Canadian underbelly at the 49th parallel. A geographical orphan, stranded by a mapmaker's error, the angle represents the northernmost point in the lower 48 states. A remote spit of woods and water surrounded on three sides by Canada. To the west is Manitoba. To the north and east lie the great dense forests of Ontario. To the south is the U.S. mainland. This is wilderness. 40 miles wide, 70 miles north to south. Gorgeous country, yes, but full of ghosts. A lone hawk circles and hunt. A mouse lies paralyzed in the blooded darkness. And in the deep, unbroken solitude, age to age, Lake of the Woods gazes back on itself like a great liquid eye. Nothing adds or subtracts. Everything is present, everything is missing. Three middle-aged fishermen vanished here in 1941. Two duck hunters lost their way in 1958, never to find it again, never to be found. Thickly timbered, almost entirely uninhabited, the angle tends toward infinity. Growth becomes rot, which becomes growth again, and repetition itself is in the nature of the angle. The history here is hard and simple. First the glaciers, then the water, then much later the Sioux and Ojibwe. The French came in 1734,
men of adventure, explorers, and Jesuits, converting or killing Indians, whichever seemed appropriate. Then fur traders and lumbermen and sawyers. And in 1882, the first settlers built their cabins along the southern and western shores of Lake of the Woods. A log church went up, later a granary and storehouse. A few hardy Swedes and Finns carved out their small, square homesteads in the forest. But the land was never good for wheat or corn, and soon the farmers were gone, and the wilderness reclaimed itself. For nearly four decades, the Northwest Angle belonged once more to the Mosquitoes. The Angle's border with Canada was not surveyed until 1925. Until 1969, the area was accessible only by boat or float plane. Even now, there are no highways. A single tar road runs through deep forest to the small community of Angle Inlet. The nearest city is Winnipeg, 122 miles to the west. The nearest bus station is in Rosseau, 47 miles to the southwest. The nearest full-time law enforcement officer is in Baudette, the county seat, a 90-mile plane ride over Lake of the Woods. And here, along the peninsula's northeastern shore, an old yellow cottage stands in the timber overlooking the lake. There are many trees, mostly pine and birch, and there is a dock and a boathouse and a narrow dirt road that winds through the forest and ends in a ledge of polished gray rocks at the shore below the cottage. It is by the nature of the angle, sun to earth, that the seasons are made, and that the waters of the lake change color by the season, blue going to gray, and then to white, and then back again to blue. The water receives color. The water returns it. The angle shapes reality. Winter ice becomes the steam of summer, as flesh becomes spirit. Partly window, partly mirror, the angle is where memory dissolves. The mathematics are always null. Water swallows sky, which swallows earth. And here, in a corner of John Wade's imagination, where things neither live nor die, Kathy stares up at him from beneath the surface of the silvered lake. Her eyes are brilliant green, her expression alert. She tries to speak but can't. She belongs to the angle. Not quite present, not quite gone. She swims in the blending twilight of in-between. Chapter 30. Evidence. Everybody at the office, we used to talk about it constantly. We'd sit around at lunch and try to figure out if Kathy ever showed any signs of, like, depression, problems at home, things like that. But you know what? Nobody ever came up with anything. She seemed just like everybody else. You got the feeling that she was basically happy, or that she thought she could be. Maybe she was just a great actress. Bethany Key, Associate Admissions Director, University of Minnesota.
With missing persons, it's like digging a hole in this big pile of sand. Damn thing just keeps filling up on you. We looked every single place there was to look. The boathouse, the cottage, every inch. Brought in divers and a couple of state police sniffer dogs. No luck. He was gone by then, of course. Didn't find a one thing.
Arthur J. Lux, Sheriff, Lake of the Woods County.
So he dumped her deep. So what?
Vincent R. Vinnie Pearson. The Bureau of Missing Persons in New York has handled, since its inception in 1917, more than 30,000 cases a year. J. Robert Nash, among the missing. My plan, so far as I have one, is to go through Mexico to one of the Pacific ports. Naturally, it is possible, even probable, that I shall not return. These be strange countries in which things happen. That is why I am going. Ambrose Bierce. Footnote. Ambrose Bierce's letter in Nash, Among the Missing, page 881. The flamboyant writer disappeared in Mexico without a trace. His last letter was dated December 26th, 1913. End of note.
Sometimes people just up and walk away. That's possible, isn't it? I don't see why everybody assumes the worst.
Ruth Rasmussen. There was one clue, I guess. It was right after the primary, maybe a day later. Kathy was getting ready to head up north, and so naturally I asked when she'd be back in the office. Like a general date, I meant. Anyway, she goes over to this window. She looks out for a while, and finally starts to laugh. Except it wasn't real laughing. Like she knew something.
Bethany Key, Associate Admissions Director, University of Minnesota. Whoever undertakes to write a biography binds himself to lying, to concealment, to flummery. Truth is not accessible. Sigmund Freud. Too bad I never got the chance to ask the man more questions. Vinny was right. Some things just plain didn't add up. I don't care what Wade said. One plus one don't never equal zero. Not in my book. Arthur J. Lux, Sheriff, Lake of the Woods County.
I can't say Claude was too happy about the way they come in that day and ripped the whole place to hell. Wasn't called for, and the old man made sure everybody knew what he thought. A few times he got pretty mouthy. Harassment, he kept saying. And he'd let out this cackle every time they came up empty. I miss that old-timer. Miss him bad. He had faith in people.
Ruth Rasmussen. All I know is, I know the guy gave me this weird look. The day before he took off, he comes in and pokes around and buys all this stuff. Like I told you already, the compass and maps and all that. And he ambles up to the cash register and starts to say something and stops and just gives me this look. Soon as he was gone, I real quick locked the door.
Myra Shaw, waitress. Yes, I shall go into Mexico with a pretty definite purpose, which, however, is not at present disclosable. You must try to forgive my obstinacy in not perishing where I am. I am pretty fond of you, I guess. May you live as long as you want to, and then pass smilingly into the darkness, the good, good darkness. Devotedly, your friend, Ambrose Bierce. The Piers Commission people weren't looking for him. We were. Nothing to it, really. Once we got wind of this so-called sorcerer, it was only a matter of time. I put the boys on it. No sweat.
Edward F. Durkee, Democratic Senatorial Nominee.
Dear Sorcerer, I'll keep this letter short because I figure you already know what happened. I didn't plan on talking, and that's the truth, even if you probably don't believe me. They were slick, I'll say that. I barely even knew I was saying stuff until I was done saying it. So much for silent Indians. Either way, they already had you pretty much pinned down. The fact that you were there that day. I guess that's my excuse. I didn't mean to get anybody in trouble, and I feel bad, but there's one thing I know for sure now. Remember that night back at the ditch? I said we should get it off our chests and go report it, and you sort of blew me off. But I was right, wasn't I? Honesty's the best policy, that's for sure. I don't know how you stood it so long.
Richard Thinbill.
Yeah, we knew the story was coming. A couple days before, the Star Trib calls asked for a comment. John says, "Tell them April Fool." Couldn't fucking believe it, I swear to God. That's what he said. And then he gave me that blank dead man look of his. Never said another word. That's when I decided to start job hunting.
Anthony L. Tony Carbo.
Kathy read about it in the papers, like everybody else. July, I think. Really hot. She asked me to drive over, and so I did, still in my gym clothes. And I stayed with her all that day and all night. John didn't come home. I remember she was frantic, really frantic, and I kept saying, "Jesus, who cares if he comes home?" But Kathy was more upset about that than the fact that her own husband was a liar and a betrayer and... So the next morning he finally shows up, walks in, gives us this don't dare ask look, goes off to take a shower. I knew right then she'd stick with him no matter what. It was obvious. So what the hell? I left. It makes me feel like... This is why I shouldn't be talking. Patricia S. Hood. Brings to mind that old saw. Mr. Wade just wanted to crawl into a hole.
Ruth Rasmussen.
Exhibit 8. John Wade's Box of Tricks. partial list. Mouse cage, stand-up mirror, military discharge, honorable, book, marriage, a guide. I guess Claude was in on it. Never said as much, but after Mr. Wade went off with the Chriscraft, well, I could see Claude wasn't all that surprised. Kind of smiled, if you know what I mean. The two of them got to be pretty close in this quiet way, like they trusted each other, like they understood how things were, and how there wasn't no choice, finally. When the old man died last year, I kept waiting for a little note or something. Kept checking the mail. Nothing. Ruth Rasmussen. He had happened to dissever himself from the world, to vanish, to give up his place and privilege with living men, without being admitted among the dead. Nathaniel Hawthorne, Wakefield. If you cannot believe in something produced by reconstruction, you may have nothing left to believe in. John Dominic Crossan, The Historical Jesus. For a while, Mr. Wade was in radio contact, just a day or so. He didn't sound so good. Rambling Rose, that's what Vinny called him. The man didn't make a whole lot of sense. Anyhow, it didn't last long. Bang, silence. Arthur J. Lux, Sheriff, Lake of the Woods County. They're gone, and they're not coming back, both of them. I mean, honestly, some things you best walk away from. Just shrug and say, who knows? I'm serious. You've been gnawing on this a long time now, way too long, and sooner or later you should think about getting back to your own life. Don't want to end up missing it. Ruth Rasmussen. Footnote. Missing my life. She's right. But there is also the craving to know what cannot be known. Our own children, our fathers, our wives and husbands. Do we truly know them? How much is camouflage? How much is guessed at? How many lies get told, and when, and about what? How often do we say or think, God, I never knew her? How often do we lie awake speculating, seeking some hidden truth? Oh, yes, it gnaws at me. I have my own secrets, my own trapdoors. I know something about deceit. Far too much. How it corrodes and corrupts. In her gentle way, I suppose, Ruth Rasmussen was trying to tell me something both hard and simple. We find truth inside, or not at all. End of note. Writers have an obsession with missing persons. J. Robert Nash, Among the Missing. Flies. You hear that? Richard Thinbill. We couldn't see the man. He was gone. Nowhere. His departure was a marvel. Sophocles. Oedipus at Colonus. My guess? I don't need to guess. He did it. Wasted her. That stare of his, the way he didn't even feel nothing. I seen it a zillion times. Who cares if we didn't ever find no evidence? All it means is he sunk her good and deep. Vincent R. Vinnie Pearson. I'm an optimist. Life after death, I believe in it. That big Chriscraft, it could go on forever. All the way to Kenora and then some. So I don't know. Maybe they're in Hudson Bay or someplace. I mean, they were in love. Honest love. Just like Claude and me. You could see it plain and obvious. If you want the truth, I keep waiting for that note in the mail. And I bet someday it'll show up. Ruth Rasmussen. I'm not in the guessing game, but I'll lay out some basic facts. Number one, they were in debt up to their necks. Number two, there wasn't a dime left in their bank account. Cleaned out slick as a whistle even before they headed up north. Number three, nobody ever found either boat. Not a single scrap, no oars, no life vests. Number four, the man was a magician. Tried to wipe his name off the Charlie Company rolls. Tried to vanish himself and damn near did it. Number whatever. Kathy had her own history. That dentist of hers. The way she used to take off now and then. I remember this time in Vegas, years and years ago. We had a talk about how sometimes you need to sort of unstick yourself. Maybe she finally did it. Maybe they both had it rigged up all along. When you think about it, they didn't have a damn thing to come back to.
Reputation shot. No more career. Bills up the gazoo. Christ, I'd run for it too.
Anthony L. Tony Carbo. Those tourist maps he bought. If he's out to zap himself, why tourist maps? Sounds to me like a tour.
Myra Shaw, waitress. Well, sure, the possibility occurred to me. I can buy one missing person. I get antsy when it's two in a row. Certain stuff always bothered me. Like on the day she disappeared, Wade spends the whole afternoon paying bills, getting his affairs in order. Only thing he didn't do was make out a will. Makes you wonder. Mainly, though, it's how he acted, if you know what I mean. The man just didn't seem all that upset or anything. Just sat around. His whole attitude didn't strike me. It didn't seem normal.
Arthur J. Lux, Sheriff, Lake of the Woods County. At first, I thought she probably drowned. An accident, I thought. But now, I'm not even half sure. I told you how we used to sit around in the office and sort of brainstorm, how we all thought she seemed perfectly fine. Right after the election, she was almost carefree. Incredibly happy. Like I'd never seen her before. At the time, I figured it was just relief or something, but maybe it was more than that. Maybe they decided. Hard to say. But I know this much. She had the guts, and she wanted changes.
Bethany Key, Associate Admissions Director, University of Minnesota.
A person has to hope for something. So, I hope they're happy. They deserved a little happiness.
Eleanor K. Wade.
Yeah, if I know Sorcerer, he had some slick shit up his sleeve. Guy had a million moves. No matter where he is, though, I bet he's still got nightmares. I bet he's out there swatting flies.
Richard Thinbill.
Footnote.
Swatting flies, yes, maybe. But still, it's odd how the mind erases horror. All the evidence suggests that John Wade was able to perform a masterly forgetting trick for nearly two decades, somehow coping, pushing it all away, and from my own experience, I can understand how he kept things buried, how he could never face or even recall the butchery at Tuan Yen. For me, after a quarter century, nothing much remains of that ugly war. A handful of splotchy images. My company commander bending over a dead soldier, wiping the man's face with a towel. A lieutenant with a bundled corpse over his shoulder, like a great sack of bird feed. My own hands. A buddy's bewildered eyes. A kid named Chip Merricks soaring into a tree. A patch of rice paddy bubbling with machine gun fire. Everything else is a smudge of hedgerows and trails and landmines and snipers and death. We moved like sleepwalkers through the empty villages, shadowed by an enemy we could never find, calling in medevac choppers and loading up the casualties, and then moving out again toward the next deadly little ville. And behind us, we left a wake of fire and smoke. We called in gunships and airstrikes. We brutalized. We wasted, we pistol-whipped, we trashed wells, we kicked and punched. We burned all that would burn. Yes, and these too were atrocities. The dirty secrets that live forever inside all of us. I have my own PFC Weatherby. My own old man with a hoe. And yet, a quality of abstraction makes reality unreal. All these years later, like John Wade, I cannot remember much. I cannot feel much. Maybe erasure is necessary. Maybe the human spirit defends itself as the body does, attacking infection, enveloping and destroying those malignancies that would otherwise consume us. Still, it's odd. On occasion, especially when I'm alone, I find myself wondering if these old tattered memories weren't lifted from someone else's life, or from a piece of fiction I once read or once heard about. My own war does not belong to me. In a peculiar way, even at this very instant, the ordeal of John Wade, the long decades of silence and lies and secrecy, all this has a vivid, living clarity that seems far more authentic
than my own faraway experience. Maybe that's what this book is for. To remind me. To give me back my vanished life. Chapter 31. Hypothesis. If all is supposition, if ending is air, then why not happiness? Are we so cynical, so sophisticated as to write off even the chance of happy endings? On the porch that night, in the fog, John Wade had promised his wife Verona deluxe hotels and a busload of babies. And then for a long while they had cradled each other in the dark, waiting for these things to happen, some sudden miracle.
Happy, Kathy had whispered. Nothing else.
Does happiness strain credibility? Is there something in the human spirit that distrusts its own appetites? Its own yearning for healing and contentment? Can we not believe that two adults in love might resolve to make their own miracle?
If we could just fall asleep and wake up happy, she might have said.
And Sorcerer might have laughed and said, why not? And then for the rest of the night they might have held each other and worked out the technicalities. Improbable, of course. More likely they drowned or got lost or lost themselves. But who will ever know? It's all hypothesis, beginning to end. Maybe in the fog, Kathy said,
we could do it right now.
And maybe Sorcerer murmured something about a pair of snakes along a trail in Pinkville. How for years and years he had wondered what would have happened if those two dumbass snakes had somehow managed to gobble each other up. A tired old story. If Kathy smiled, it was out of politeness. But maybe she said, I dare us. Too sentimental? Would we prefer a wee hour boiling? A tea kettle? And scalded flesh? Footnote. Finally, it's a matter of taste or aesthetics, and the boil is one possibility that I must reject as both graceless and disgusting. Besides, there's the weight of evidence. He was crazy about her. End of note. Maybe so. Footnote. Because on the other hand, there's no accounting for taste. It's a judgment call. Maybe you hear her screaming. Maybe you see steam rising from the sockets of her eyes. End of note. Yet the evidence does not exclude the possibility that they ran for their lives. John Wade was a magician. There was nothing to call him back. And so one chilly evening he might have joined her on the shore of Oak Island or Massacre Island or Buckeat Island. Maybe she scolded him for being late. All around them there was only wilderness, dark and silent, which was what they had come for. They needed the solitude. They needed to go away together. Maybe they spent the night huddled at a small fire, celebrating, thinking up names for the children they wanted. Funny names, sometimes so they could laugh. And then later they would have planned the furnishings for their new house, the fine rugs they would buy, the antique brass lamps, the exact colors of the wallpaper, all the details. They would have listened to the night. They would have heard rustlings in the timber, things growing and things rotting, the lap of lake against shore. Maybe they made love. Maybe they wrapped themselves in blankets and fell asleep and woke up happy. And maybe in the morning they set to bearing north toward Kenora or west toward Winnipeg, where they would have ditched the Chris Craft and made their way on foot to a bus station or to a small private airport. Documents? Passports? He was Sorcerer. High over the Atlantic, they would have levered back their seats and unburdened themselves of all secrets, good things and bad things.
Kath, my Kath,
Sorcerer would have whispered, as if to summon her spirit, feeling the rise and fall of her breath against his hand. For both of them it was a wishing game, except now they were inside their wishes, and maybe one day they discovered happiness on the earth, in some secret country perhaps, or in an exotic foreign capital with bizarre customs and a difficult new language. To live there would require practice and many changes, but they were willing to learn. Footnote. My heart tells me to stop right here, to offer some quiet benediction and call it the end. But truth won't allow it, because there is no end, happy or otherwise. Nothing is fixed, nothing is solved. The facts, such as they are, finally spin off into the void of things missing, the inconclusiveness of conclusion. Mystery finally claims us. Who are we? Where do we go? The ambiguity may be dissatisfying, even irritating, but this is a love story. There is no tidiness. Blame it on the human heart. One way or another, it seems, we all perform vanishing tricks, effacing history, locking up our lives and slipping day by day into the graying shadows. Our whereabouts are uncertain. All secrets lead to the dark, and beyond the dark, there is only maybe. End of note. John Wade made his last broadcast in the early morning hours of Sunday, October 26, 1986. He offered a number of rambling incantations to the atmosphere, apologies and regrets, quiet declarations of sorrow. His tone was confessional. At times he cried. At dawn, just before signing off, he seemed to break down entirely. Not his mind. His heart. There were garbled prayers, convulsive pleas directed to Kathy and to God. He spoke bluntly to his father, whose affection he now demanded, whom he begged for esteem and constancy. And then, near the end, his voice began to sink into the lake itself, barely audible, little bubbles of sentimental gibberish. Your tennis shoes. Those hearts I drew. Only for love. Only to be loved. Because you asked once, what is sacred? And because the answer was always you. Sacred? Now you know. Where are you? A murderer? A man who could boil? At no point in this discourse did John Wade admit to the slightest knowledge of Kathy's whereabouts, nor indicate that he was withholding information. Which brings me to wonder. Is it possible that even to John Wade everything was the purest puzzle? That one day he woke up to find his wife missing, and missing forever? And that all else was unknown? That the clues led nowhere? That explanations were beyond him? Sorrow, it seems to me, may be the true absolute. John grieved for Kathy. She was his world. They could have been so happy together. He loved her, and she was gone, and he could not bear the horror. Winter came early that year. By late afternoon on October 26th, a half foot of snow covered the islands and shores of Lake of the Woods. The birds were gone. Wildlife was in retreat. The pine forests stood silent in their wrap of white. To the horizon, in all directions, there was only the vast ongoing freeze, everything in correspondence, an icy latticework of valences and affinities. John Wade had lost himself in the tangle. He was alone. The throttle was at full power. He was declaiming to the wind, her name, his love. He was heading north, weaving from island to island, skimming fast between water and sky. Can we believe that he was not a monster, but a man? That he was innocent of everything, except his life? Could the truth be so simple, so terrible?
This has been an Audible Inc. production of In the Lake of the Woods, written by Tim O'Brien, narrated by L.J. Ganser. Executive Producer, Kristen Lang. Producer, Mike Charsik. Music by Michael Whalen. Copyright 1994 by Tim O'Brien. Production copyright 2011 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.